you beautiful bastards. Hope you're having a fantastic Wednesday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today, by far one of the most requested stories since Monday, is XXXTentacion. And that's because on Monday, the 20-year-old rapper, whose real name is Jesse Onfroy, was shot and killed in Florida. According to police, shortly before 4 p.m., two men in a dark-colored SUV shot him and then fled the scene. And very quickly after this happened, there were a number of videos uploaded to the internet showing him not moving in his car. It wasn't initially clear if he was just unconscious or he was dead, but he was then taken to a local hospital and authorities did pronounce him dead there. And as far as the motive for the shooting, authorities have suggested that it may have been an attempted robbery, but as of right now, no arrests have been made. One of the most interesting things to come from this story have been the reactions. And that's because if you're not familiar with XXXTentacion, he has a controversial past. A past filled with allegations of violence, some accusing him, and some that he himself said he did. And to properly explain why there has been such a massively different reaction to his death, I think it's important that we do an overview of those first. In 2015, he was charged with home invasion, robbery, and aggravated battery. In March 2017, he pled no contest to those charges and received probation. Also in October of 2016, he was arrested and charged with aggravated battery of a pregnant woman, domestic battery by strangulation and false imprisonment, and witness tampering. The alleged victim, who is also his ex-girlfriend, giving horrifying testimony. In one instance, she said he hit her to the point of losing vision in one eye and kept her from seeking medical help. She said he threatened to do things like penetrate her vagina with a barbecue fork, also saying that he punched, slapped, stomped, elbowed, strangled, and headbutted her. And there are more allegations on top of that I'll link down below. Now, on the other side of that story, X had repeatedly denied those claims. He had pled not guilty to those charges and the trial was still pending. And so that's the main example of allegations made against him. But there was also, of course, the Adam 22 No Jumper podcast where he made allegations of his own. On the No Jumper podcast, he described a story where he beat a cellmate who he believed was gay for looking at him. And during this beating, he said he smeared the man's blood on his face. And so then fast forward to after his death, there were a good number of people who were not sympathetic. Some, like this Twitter user, went as far to say, "My take on that XXX guy is that he got what he deserved. He did unexcusable things that, in my opinion, made him lose his rights as a human. There's boundaries you shouldn't overstep, and he did, hence no sympathy for him from me." Other users even going as far to celebrate this death, but then you also saw many others go the other way, acknowledging his past, but saying it shouldn't have happened. Like this tweet saying, "XXX did messed up shit. I don't justify his actions, but I can sympathize with a young life taken too early, especially being robbed and murdered in cold blood." And since this death, a lot of people have been sharing this Instagram story from months ago. And I'll showcase one of the key points from that story because it relates to some of the other reaction.
"Worst thing comes to worst, I fucking die a tragic death or some shit, and I'm not able to see out my dreams. I at least want to know that the kids perceived my message and were able to make something of themselves and able to take my message and use it and turn it into something positive and to at least have a good life. I want to make sure that my life made at least 5 million kids happy. So I just wanted to say I appreciate and love all of you, and I believe in you all. Do not let your depression make you. Do not let your body define your soul. Let your soul define your body. Your mind is limitless. You are worth more than you could believe. All you have to do is dream. And all you have to do is want to fulfill that dream and have the strength."
And so that positive note there is something that many, including J. Cole, hit on. J. Cole tweeting, "Rip X, enormous talent and limitless potential and a strong desire to be a better person. God bless his family, friends, and fans." And that was one of the key points that supporters kept hitting on. That he was young, he had a desire to be a better person, and he was all about trying to put positive out there in the world. And some of the moves he made that people were pointing to when he announced that he would donate $100,000 to domestic violence prevention programs. Also saying he wanted to host an event to support rape victims. And at the time there was support for that, people seeing this as a positive move, whereas others saw this as just a PR move to get him away from his bad image. Earlier this year, he announced a movement called Helping Hand Challenge, calling on fans to perform charitable acts for a chance to spend time with them. He visited the foster home SOS Children's Village to donate musical instruments, video games, clothes, and more. In March, he held a benefit concert called A Helping Hand for the victims of the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. In May, he announced plans to expand that movement, and in fact, the day that he was killed, he announced plans on Instagram that he was going to have a charity event over the weekend. And so that's why you've had so many people saying that he should not be defined by the actions of his past, but by the changes he was trying to make. And something that was really representative of how torn and confusing this was to a lot of people around this situation, I mean, we can just look at Geneva Ayala. She's the ex-girlfriend that X allegedly assaulted. Since her accusations went public from fans, she got a ton of hate, death threats. But yesterday she tweeted, "I know y'all don't fuck with me, but this isn't about me. Just please stop tagging me in disrespectful threads and arguments. I honestly don't care for any of the hype. I lost someone close to me, leave me alone. It's disgusting that people are speaking for me. I don't care if no one cared about me, however however many months ago. I didn't lose my life. He did. It's permanent. I'm still here. Like, how do you think that makes me feel? Everyone expecting me to be relieved or happy? No, I'm broken. And one of the most recent updates to this story is that yesterday there were two memorials held for X. One was held last night in Los Angeles, where reportedly upwards of 1,000 people came together on Melrose Avenue to pay tribute. The event was publicized on social media. It initially started off peaceful, but then it escalated from there. There were photo and videos from the scene showing crowds blocking traffic. At one point, there was a mosh pit. We saw fans swarming cars, some climbing on top of them, some standing on rooftops, some jumping off of them into the crowd. So the LAPD began breaking things up shortly after 9 p.m. According to reports, some attendees then threw rocks at them. And so then, according to authorities, they were authorized to use tear gas to disperse the crowd. But then, for the most part, at 10:30, things had cleared up. And according to the reports, there were no serious injuries reported and no arrests made. And as of right now, that's where we are with this story. And I'm left with the question of how much of someone's past defines them. Like, when I think of some garbage people like the Brock Turners of the world, the Affluenza Kids of the world, I don't know if I personally believe there is anything they could do in their life where I would go, oh, you're not a garbage person. And then when you look at a story like this, you wonder, okay, well, what if the specifics of this situation were applied to the Brock Turners and were applied to the Affluenza Kids of the world? Let's say they died before their conviction and sentencing came through, and they were donating money to charity, they were doing positive things. Would that change things? And I'm not giving those examples to prove a point. I'm genuinely questioning. And so I want to pass that question off to you, whether it be the hypothetical situation that I just kind of threw out there, or with this specific death. Also, do you feel like society is more or less forgiving of those who are in fields of entertainment, sports, etc.? I don't know, but I'd love to know your thoughts on it. And then very quickly, let's talk about Pokemon Go back in the news. This time, not because a politician told people to Pokemon Go to the polls and then a nation collectively cringed together, but because police told two to Pokemon Go to jail. And reportedly, this assault involved a 71-year-old man by the name of Robert Matuzzi and his 31-year-old adult son, attacking another Pokemon Go player who had accused them of cheating and had thrown a Gatorade bottle in their car. And according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, it was all recorded. A bystander took video of the encounter and caught Robert Matuzzi holding the victim down while his son hit the victim's head and face several times. The police saying the victim suffered cuts to his face, a traumatic eye injury, and a broken fingertip. The father-son duo are also facing third-degree assault charges now. And my response to all of this is, it's just a game! If you're a 71-year-old man tag-teaming someone in real life because of a Pokemon Go gym dispute, my only question is, how long have you been this pathetic, and how did it get this bad? Also, side note, if you are one of the people that play Pokemon Go and you have like six phones out at the same time, You're just one bad interaction away from being this. Just throwing that out there. But from that, I want to share some stuff I love today. And today in Awesome, brought to you by BetterHelp.com/DeFranco. BetterHelp, if you don't know, is the fantastic place where you can get affordable private online counseling. You get access to licensed, trained, experienced, accredited psychologists, marriage and family therapists, clinical social workers, and board licensed professional counselors. And all you've got to do is go to BetterHelp.com/DeFranco. You fill out the questionnaire, they match you up with a counselor, and you could start counseling today. And really leaning into the affordable aspect, if money is an issue for you can also apply to see if you are eligible for a financial aid discount. And I will say from personal experience, because I actually signed up for BetterHelp before I brought them on as a sponsor, it is fantastic. And so if that sounds interesting to you, you want to try it out, just go to betterhelp.com/DeFranco and sign up. And the first bit of awesome today is Instagram has just launched IGTV. And with that, you'll be able to download the standalone IGTV app, or just right in Instagram at the click of a button, you will now get long form video. And as Business Insider put it, it looks like this move is Instagram declaring war on YouTube. They've embraced and thrived with live, they have embraced stories, and now long form is the new target. And personally, I welcome any sort of social media war like this, because it forces both to offer something interesting to the creators out there, whether it be experiences or new opportunities. And to make things interesting, they're incorporating people that are massive on Instagram and YouTube, like Lele Pons. She announced and launched her new cooking show with IGTV today. Also embracing one of the most massive names in online entertainment right now, Ninja. And since it's been so requested by so many of you that we start uploading individual stories all over the place, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, and now Instagram, we are doing this at launch. Essentially, at launch, it's stories that we covered inside of the Philip DeFranco show, but because it's vertical video with a different look and captions, it's also going to be where we post more and more of the newer content that we've been testing behind DeFranco Elite. But main point, if you're not already following me on Instagram, make sure you follow me. The name is Philly DeFranco over there. And also, in addition to this, since the main show is expanding, where we're figuring out the workflow to also make everything work on Twitter, Facebook, wherever else. Then in, oh my god, I'm so excited news, we got a trailer for Creed 2. Now, of course, as an Italian, I'm legally obligated to purchase a ticket for every single movie Sylvester Stallone has ever put out, but I am genuinely pumped about this. The Rocky franchise is one of my the things that I have loved for the longest part of my life. Like, the connection people have with the Star Wars franchise, that's what I have with the Rocky franchise. And of course, obligatory side note, Rocky 5 never happened. It is not a real movie, it is just a collective nightmare that the fake news media has told us actually happened. Then Wired gave us every dinosaur in Jurassic Park series explained. Then, if you're one of those cat people, The Atlantic has a video for you. We also got the honest trailer for Jurassic Park 3. Then we got a trailer for season 2 of Nailed It, which, by the way, Nicole Byer, I love your face, and MTV is incredibly stupid for having canceled your show. And as much as I love you, I won't watch season 2 on Facebook Watch. But you are fantastic. And of course, remember, if you want to see the full versions of everything, I just shared the secret link of the day, anything at all. Links, as always, are in the description down below. And then, once again, let's talk about one of the largest, most controversial stories that we've covered these past several weeks, and that is what is happening at the border. If you have not seen the Monday or Tuesday video, I know yesterday's video was like 2.5 hours late, I highly recommend you watch those first, but let's talk about updates. First up, last night we saw demonstrators disrupting Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen's dinner at an upscale Mexican restaurant. You hear them shouting, "Abolish ICE," chanting shame. You see the demonstrators ask to leave, they do not comply. You hear them saying, "If kids don't eat in peace, you don't eat in peace." They play the audio of the children crying out for their parents that we played for you yesterday, and according to some of those in the group, they ended up being escorted out by police. And along with this video, the people that posted, the Metro DC Democratic Socialists of America, said in a statement, "We will not stand by and let Secretary Nielsen dine in peace while she is directing her employees to tear little girls away from their mothers and crying boys from their fathers at our border." Adding, "While Secretary Nielsen's dinner may have been ruined, it is nothing compared to the horrors she has inflicted on innocent families." We also saw several protests. Yesterday, Vice President Mike Pence was at the Republican Governors Association fundraiser in Philadelphia, and outside of that event, we saw hundreds of protests show up. Several people were laying out children's shoes in solidarity with the families being separated. There was also an instance where a federal detail car tried to go down one of the streets to where the protesters were gathered, and the protesters swarmed the car and refused to let it pass. Cops ended up having to step in. Reportedly, they arrested one protester. In New York, we saw demonstrators marching from Union Square Park to ICE offices in Lower Manhattan. And then you had another protest in San Francisco outside of the ICE offices there. Yesterday, we also saw Microsoft become involved in this story. This because an open letter was posted to Microsoft's internal message board yesterday where more than 100 employees protested the company's work with ICE. The letter was addressed to CEO Satya Nadella and said, "We believe that Microsoft must take an ethical stand and put children and families above profits. Therefore, we ask Microsoft to cancel its contract with ICE immediately, including contracts with clients who support ICE. We call on Microsoft to draft, publicize, and enforce a clear policy stating that neither Microsoft nor its contractors will work with clients who violate international human rights law." And then pointing to a $19.4 million contract that Microsoft has with ICE. And after that letter was posted, the CEO actually released a response in a memo saying he was appalled by the policy, saying, "As both a parent and an immigrant, this touches him personally." And then adding, "Microsoft is not working with the U.S. government on any projects related to separating children from their families at the border. Our current cloud engagement with ICE is supporting legacy mail, calendar, messaging, and document management workloads." To which, of course, there was pushback saying supporting them in any way is supporting them there. We then saw the Associated Press breaking the news that babies and young children who are being separated from their families are being held in something called a tender age shelter in southern Texas. There's also been a lot of confusion as far as what is considered tender age. The AP reports that Health and Human Services defines tender age typically as 12 and under, but Customs and Border Protection has at times defined it as 5 and under. And that's also important because officials from both law enforcement and Health and Human Services said they don't know how many children are actually under 5. Medical providers and lawyers have reportedly visited these shelters. They have described the playrooms of what the AP is calling crying preschool age children in crisis. But they also told the AP that the facilities were fine, clean, and safe. And we saw Marsha Griffin, who is a South Texas pediatrician, hitting on this note saying the shelters aren't the problem. It's taking kids from their parents that's the problem. And there you have experts saying that this is causing these children to have permanent emotional damage. And on this note, Alicia Lieberman, who runs the Early Trauma Treatment Network at the University of California, San Francisco, said, "Their fear triggers a flood of stress hormones that disrupt neural circuits in the brain, create high levels of anxiety, make them more susceptible to physical and emotional illness, and damage their capacity to manage their emotions, trust people, and focus their attention on age-appropriate activities." But on the other side of this, you also have Stephen Wagner, an official with the Department of Health and Human Services, saying, "We have specialized facilities that are devoted to providing care to children with special needs, and tender age children, as we define as under 13, would fall into that category. They're not government facilities per se, and they have very well-trained clinicians, and those facilities meet state licensing standards for child welfare agencies, and they're staffed by people who know how to deal with the needs, particularly of the younger children." Also along with this story, specifically that of young children being detained, we had Corey Lewandowski pop back into the news. He, of course, Donald Trump's former campaign manager, and he went viral because of this interaction.
I read today about a 10-year-old girl with Down syndrome who was taken from her mother and put in a cage.
And so, of course, this blew up because it very much seemed like Lewandowski was being disgusting and callous about the story of a special needs child being stripped from her parents. And then this morning, Lewandowski took to Twitter to defend himself, tweeting, "Lots of fake news today. I mocked a liberal who attempted to politicize children as opposed to discussing the real issue, which is fixing a broken immigration system. It's offensive that the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about the fact these policies were started under Obama." And he also spoke with Fox News host Sandra Smith this morning, saying that he wasn't taking aim at that young girl, explaining,
I don't know the young girl that Zach referenced. I was mocking Zach, a liberal Democrat National Committee activist who is doing nothing but politicizing the issue of making an example of one particular child."
And just very quickly, I want to plop in my opinion here. I personally find this to be Lewandowski giving a bullshit, half-assed response. One, when you said womp womp, 100% you were minimizing and mocking a story of a very real person. A very real child going through what I imagine is an unimaginable, confusing trauma. Two, to the point that this was some lib just politicizing the kids. And my response to that is you could say that about anyone sharing any story whatsoever. What we are seeing here are the ramifications of a change. We constantly see President Trump saying something along the lines of the Dems want MS-13 crossing into the border, hurting people, and then this is now a showcasing of some of the children that are being impacted. And finally, three, no matter the amount of gaslighting, this is not an Obama policy, this is a Trump policy. We've talked about and seen photos of children from when Obama was president, and those children were those going across the border by themselves, not the zero tolerance policy that Donald Trump's Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced both internally and publicly. It's the reason we weren't talking about this 8-9 weeks ago. It's the reason why Trump administration officials are giving the total number, the body count, as far as kids being separated from their families over the past 6-7 weeks. And just seeing him say all of this, it's like he has a severe allergy to the truth. And in fact, what happened under Obama is what led to so many families being released, or what Donald Trump refers to as catch and release. The Flores Agreement prevents the federal government from holding children, whether accompanied by an adult or by themselves, for more than 20 days. So then the Obama administration tried to fast-track, expedite the situation regarding any situation with a minor. But because they were trying to then rush these cases in less than 20 days, there was a huge complaint as far as due process. Specifically, that due process would not be possible due to such a limited amount of time. And so what we ended up seeing were these families being detained together but then released before it passed 20 days. I mean, understand what I'm trying to say here is that there is no one-to-one comparison. This is something that Denise Gilman, the director of immigration clinic at the University of Texas Law School, hit on, saying the idea that this is simply a continuation of an Obama-era practice is preposterous. There were occasionally instances where you would find a separated family, maybe like one every 6 months to a year. And that was usually because there had been some actual individualized concern that there was a trafficking situation or that the parent wasn't actually the parent. There were not 2,000 kids in 2 months. It's not the same universe. Then on top of this, with this story, we saw other governors jumping into it. Yesterday we talked about the governors from New York, Massachusetts, Colorado. And since then, we've seen Delaware Governor John Carney saying in a statement that he would not send the National Guard to the southwest border, something we also saw from New Hampshire and Rhode Island. We also saw the governors from Virginia, Maryland, and North Carolina pulling back resources, some helicopters, crew members, soldiers. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam saying Virginia will not devote any resource to border enforcement actions that support the inhumane policy of separating children from their parents. We also saw Michigan's Department of Civil Rights denouncing Trump's zero tolerance policy. And this is incredibly notable because Michigan has begun receiving children reportedly as young as 3 months for temporary foster care after they have been taken away from their parents. And the executive director for that department released a statement saying, "While the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, along with people all over the nation, decry the forced separation of children from their parents taking place on our southern border, the policy is a federal issue and beyond the scope of this department's responsibilities under law." But then adding, "But for those children who have been separated from their parents and brought to Michigan, the Department of Civil Rights has a duty to make sure their civil rights are protected." Adding, "While we commend the work of resettlement agencies in Michigan attempting to serve these children with dignity and compassion, nothing can replace the love, sense of security, and care of a parent." And actually, a last second update to today's show, Donald Trump has now signed an order to end family separation at the border. This is a pretty surprising move, not just because it does seem like the pivoting or slight back down from the president, but because just last Friday he said he wouldn't be able to fix this situation with an executive order.
Can't get him from the Democrats.
What about executive
order? Mr. President,
now wait, you can't do it to an executive order.
But the situation is also not done, as Nielsen pointed out after the signing, saying, "We look forward and expect the House to act this week. We ask them to do their job. The laws need to be changed." And so ultimately, as of recording this video, that is where we are. As far as what this looks like in the next 12 to 24 hours post-signing, That remains to be seen. Also, with the broken Congress that we have right now, what, if anything, will we see from them in the next 1 to 2 weeks? But also for those that have been against the Trump administration and the way everything has been handled so far, you may not be happy with what happens next. It does appear that the main target for the Trump administration is the Flores Agreement and undoing it in some way. And so what you would end up looking at is, yes, a situation where families would be kept together initially. But one, the Trump administration may find themselves in the same pitfall as the Obama administration, that trying to expedite these specific cases may not guarantee people due process, which then becomes a whole legal problem. And then two, depending on how backlogged the system is, you still have a situation where you have children being detained, but with their parents, which, yes, is better. And also three, keep in mind that the Trump administration has said that they do not plan on backing down from the zero tolerance policy. So if we do see a change, it will most likely not be exactly what you have been thinking should happen. Whereas others that are really, really, really focused on border security but have been feeling bad about the kids, for them, this may end up being a middle ground. And so ultimately, we're just gonna have to wait and see. And so that's where I'm going to end today's show. And of course, remember, this is the Philip DeFranco Show. It is not just a show, it is a conversation, whether it be the last story, the first one, anything in between. Let me know what you're thinking in those comments down below. And of course, remember to hit us with a like, hit that subscribe button, ring that bell, jump off a cliff, dodge a dodgeball, write a letter to your mother about how you really feel about things. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love your faces, and I'll see you tomorrow, most likely from a hotel room.